Good morning. Welcome to the Dirtbag. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month, although we are recording this the previous week. With me in the studio is Jim Gilbert of One Green World. Full disclosure, One Green World is an underwriter of this program. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Glenn.
Well, full schedule, even though we have no guests today, but we've got lots to talk about. Our fruit of the month, or our plant of the month, is another fruit. This is the time for that. Is
blackberries.
That's right. And Jim brought some in for us to taste. Well, too bad Kurt's not here.
Yeah. Save some for him.
Maybe that's right.
Freeze him or something.
That's right. And I'll bring some in a little bit later. So we'll be talking about blackberries, also what's ripe in the orchard and what's ripe in the vegetable garden. I'll also be talking about summer pruning. This is the ideal time to prune your fruit trees if they are at the size that you want them to be. And towards the end, I will talk about cover crops. It'll be time to do that soon.
Yes.
So, anything going on in outside? Not many festivals, events, fairs going on.
This is time for vacations and getting stuff done. And we just at the nursery. We just started budding.
Type of grafting.
Yeah, type of grafting, and which we do thousands and thousands of fruit trees. The problem this year is that because of our long wet spring and early summer, a lot of the rootstock isn't ready yet, and the cyanwood is not ready. So it's challenging. We're going from one variety to another, looking for wood that's ready to go.
Well, that does remind me of one event that the Home Orchard Society will be having. Uh-huh. That's their budding workshop out at the Home Orchards Arboretum Clackamas County. College. That's right. Uh-huh. And you might even have a date on that. I think it might be August 6th, Saturday.
August 6th, fruit tree budding. That's very soon. Actually, that's after the show.
Before
the show will be played.
Right, so never mind there, too. But you also have the end time for this show will be your second Saturday tasting.
Yes.
Out at One Green World.
Yes.
And what's probably something that you wait for all year long.
I live for figs. I can't wait, and I think they're late this year, by that time we should have Desert King figs for
tasting.
That's the 13th of August.
13th. Yes.
And one should not live their life without tasting a fresh fig. It's just a delicacy that's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. And you'll have them out there for tasting as well as other things.
Yes, early apples, probably still some berries and different things. So it's a lot of fun, and it's a great chance to taste stuff that you can't oftentimes get fresh, you know, other times of the year.
Yeah, they get pretty mushy in the transport, so.
Well, yeah, we could talk. I mean, figs, of course, are one of my favorite subjects to talk about, too, because they're so, such a good plant to grow locally, because you can't get a good fresh fig unless you get it locally. Fact of the matter.
So you can go to tastings, and then the Home Orchard Society will have their fruit show in October. We'll have more information on that in the September show.
Yes.
And you can figure out if you like figs. There'll be other figs varieties too to plant there, to taste at your fruit tasting?
On the second Saturday in August, it will be only Desert King.
Okay. Others maybe in September?
In September, the second Saturday in September. And then in October, there's the harvest. We have harvest festivals, which we have three different, the first three Saturdays of October.
Okay.
So we're guaranteed pretty much to have fall figs by then, plus all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll try to have a listing of events and other tastings, harvest festivals, and things like that on our September show, which I understand you may not be here.
Well, you know, I just was looking at the calendar, and I get to go to two incredible events in October. The first one is the International Pawpaw Conference. That's going to be in Frankfort, Kentucky. Researchers from all over, I know at least from Romania.
All over the world.
Yeah, but Romania is like the only one I know from outside the U.S., but pawpaw is becoming an international crop, and it's very interesting. That's our largest Native American fruit. And there's a great researcher named Kirk Pomper who works in Kentucky on this crop, and so he's hosting this conference. And the following weekend is Ohio Pawpaw Festival in Athens, Ohio. So if listeners would like to go for a fun trip to the east side of the country, check out pawpaws. It's a lot of great. The Pawpaw Festival is really not just pawpaws. It's music and all sorts of great stuff in a part of the world that we don't get to experience very often. So it's kind of neat.
Okay. Well, I'll look forward to tasting some pawpaws this year, too.
Yeah, we should mention that. We will have pawpaws at the Harvest Festival.
In October. Oh, October. Okay. Yeah. Very good. All right. This is Glenn Andreessen talking with Jim Gilbert. The plant of the month, blackberries. That's kind of just a generic term, isn't it? Or is there such thing as a blackberry?
Well, it's kind of used for everything, every berry that's black, although there are some blackish berries that really aren't theoretically blackberries, but there's raspberries. We sometimes lump them together and call them cane berries because they grow on canes, but blackberries generally, I think, are known. They're a plant that has a primocane and a floricane, and so you get your fruit on the floricane. The primocane is what grows this year, and then it fruits the following year. So it changes. It starts out as a primocane, then becomes a floricane.
And, it gets renamed the second year.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so what you see, what you do with those, of course, is when the primocane comes up, it gets tied to a trellis. So you need something to hold up the canes. And after the floricanes have fruited in the fall, they'll fruit during the summer, and then in the fall you just remove those, and then the primocanes become the fruiting canes for the following year. You tie them to the trellis. So I think that may be one distinguishing factor of blackberries, although there are primocane varieties that bear on the first year, bear on that primocane in the fall. And we're sort of experimenting with those, but right now the Oregon blackberries, the ones that we take so much pride in and we love so much, there are the typical ones that bear on two-year wood. Like, and of course some of those, we all know the names of them. Marionberry is probably the classic blackberry. Boysenberry is another one that's really well known here. Interestingly, Loganberry, which people know about, I find that's an interesting berry to me because it's a little different than the typical blackberries. It has raspberry in it.
Is that one of its parents?
Yes, it back a ways, but it's definitely, when you eat a Loganberry, it has a texture more of a raspberry and definitely a raspberry flavor to it, which I find is really good.
You didn't bring any of those in today, did you?
You know, they're all gone.
Oh,
they
ripen
so early that they were passed.
Well, you did bring a few samples in. We'll get to those in just a bit there.
Uh-huh. Do you grow blackberries?
Yes, I grow not only marionberry, but I grow one clump of nectarberry.
Mm.
It's similar to a boysenberry, and it's similar in shape to this one. Which is this one?
That's the boysenberry.
Boysenberry, yeah. So similar to that.
Uh-huh.
And I also grow a variety called Triple Crown, and the three selling points for this is, one, that the berries are huge, you know, big as your thumb type, the earlier ones, that the plants are vigorous, the stalks can be, the primocanes, this is the ones that grow this year, can get up to 2 inches in diameter.
Wow, that is big.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the third, and maybe this is its best point, although they're a fine-tasting berry as well, is that they're thornless.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty nice to be able to brush by them and not have to worry about it and pick them and whatnot. So I've expanded my crop, my planting area of these triple crowns.
Uh-huh. It's interesting. I was recently at the North Willamette Experiment Station in Aurora, where they have a planting of blackberries, and there's a researcher named Chad Finn who's doing crossing and creating new varieties. And one of the reasons that the thornless varieties were developed was because the thorny types, when used in processing, the thorns occasionally would get into the processed fruit, and they had lawsuits.
Uh-huh.
And so growers started going toward thornless ones to avoid that. For fresh eating, That's not the case when you pick the berry right off and sell it for, you know, media consumption. Mm-hmm. But when you process it with a machine, you pick with a machine, the thorns can get into the berries.
Are Marion berries picked with by machine too?
Yes.
They just wait till they get almost dead ripe, so they fall off the branch. They vibrate the plant.
Have you ever seen one of those machines?
Well, not with the blackberries, but I have seen blueberry.
They're probably the same basic
raspberry.
Idea. Little fingers, and they brush against the berries, and those that are ripe fall off and are gathered up. And I'm not certain of this, but I think they do probably pick them more than once because not all the berries are ripe at the same time.
Right.
But what is interesting to me also is the thornless varieties, of which there are a couple other ones. Black Diamond is another one. Chester is probably the most widely planted one, widely planted blackberry right now.
It's called Chester?
Called Chester.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
And those thornless ones ripen later, typically. Like right now, the thornier types are, you know, they're kind of getting done. But out of my place, the thornless ones are just starting to ripen. And so they're a later one.
And that's a good point these thornless ones do ripen later, so if you have one of each or several of each, then you can extend your season.
Yeah, and I'm finding it today. I just went out and picked these berries, and I noticed that these thorny ones aren't like the Himalayan blackberry that we are unwelcome guests usually in our.
You mean the Armenian berry, don't you? Remember, it's been renamed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, that was a stumper once we had here.
I sort of recall that. Habits changed.
Difficult. So the Himalayan, that's it. It's old name, but
most people know it like that.
Indeed, that's our task here, is to re-educate.
Right.
So Armenian / Himalayan berry.
Those somewhat unwelcome guests that we deal with in our country or even sometimes in city locations, those thorns are nasty and the plants are not happy. I mean, they're not happy, but don't make us happy. But I noticed that my thorny blackberries, like Obsidian, which I brought one of, the thorns are very, very small, and they're not they're not aggressive, and you know, they don't go after you.
Yeah, well, the Marians are, those are thorns. Those are real thorns.
Are they real thorns?
Yeah,
on those.
They'll stick you.
Yeah, and even the boysenberry, which I brought, the thorns weren't like something that they were easy to pick. It wasn't a problem to pick them.
Well, this will be an ideal time for us to take our first musical break, and while we listen, we will be munching on the berries. So we'll be back after this musical break.
People see me, but they just don't know what's in my heart and why I love you so. I love you, baby, like a miner loves gold. So come on, baby, and let the good time roll. Understood. It's even nicer when you're feeling good. You got me flipping like a flag on a pole. So come on, baby, and let the good time roll. Kind that fold. So come on, baby, and let the good time roll.
Well, that's Earl King doing his own composition, Come On, Parts 1 and 2. Now, the only reason I played that is because that was co-written by Chuck Berry. That was the only...
That was the only... so appropriate.
That's right. That's the only reason that
Not Marion Berry.
No, that's the
former... Which is a really great name.
That's the former mayor of Washington, D.C.
But,
all right. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the care and... feeding, if you will, of blackberries.
Yes. Well, it is they're pretty easy to grow. And we put in a little planting about 3 years ago just to demonstrate that. We'd had them growing before, but we really never just like started from scratch. I wanted to see how easy they were to grow without any spraying, because they do get sprayed a bit in the commercial world. And I found out that the primary spraying is a delayed dormant spray of lime sulfur, which is just before they start to grow in the spring. And that takes care of most disease problems. There's one disease called septoria that causes leaf dieback, and that's what they use that for. And that's an organic spray. So
yeah, it's good. Accepted in use. Accepted for use in organic farms and gardens.
Yeah. There's a virus called calico virus that shows up in these plants. It's not a problem. In fact, it's pretty ubiquitous, and it causes little yellow spots on the leaves, but orchardists don't worry about it. And we've seen it in some of our plants, but doesn't seem to cause any problems with fruiting or anything. Other than that, they're really pretty darn easy to grow.
So you put on the lime sulfur?
Yes. Well, we didn't do it. We are going to try it. We didn't
it
at all. We didn't spray anything this year.
So these berries that we just sampled, which were delectably tasty, no spray.
No spray. And what I really was really impressive to me, obsidian, this one variety, of all the variety, all the plants we had in our block, was probably the most vigorous, healthy, productive of those. And I wouldn't want to make a judgment that it's going to be that superior every year or anything, but this year definitely I was concerned about all the weather and how that would affect them. Boysenberry looked really good too. We've got a variety called Ardenberry, which is an interesting one. It comes from a man named Arden Sheets, who worked as an extension agent. And it's a very low acid blackberry, sweet, very nice, just eat it fresh. Just like all these are, but it's kind of different because of its low acid. And then, of course, Loganberry has kind of the unique raspberry-like flavor. But there's a lot of blackberry varieties, and a lot have been in the trade, and now they've kind of been supplanted by different ones, newer ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's dozens of varieties of blackberries.
Yeah, and I think the newer ones like Obsidian they have good traits. They keep working on these, trying to select them for good size fruit and easy growth.
And these don't ship as well either, so a little bit better than figs, but best to get them right off the vine.
Yeah, it was another interesting thing we noticed at the experiment station. They had some varieties that were created in the east in Arkansas, where there's another sort of blackberry breeding program going on. And the varieties from Arkansas were about a third the size of the same variety grown here in our climate. We have a very good climate. I think it's not too hot, which is helpful for them. And the eastern ones also are more seedy. I think, I've noticed that when I was back there once, was that ours are really, really wonderful. I think they're the best in the world.
I will mention that I will be giving a free talk and tour at Garden Fever Nursery on the 20th of August, and it'll be on pruning and training of raspberries and blackberries.
Great.
So you can come to hear what I have to say, a little more than what we have time for here, and then a tour and demo of what I do at my own garden. So that's a free thing.
How can people find out about that?
Well, you contact Garden Fever to register for that. It's free, but you do have to register.
And where is Garden Fever?
That's at about 24th and Fremont Northeast.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know where it is.
The old nature store there. You old timers would know that.
That's right.
Okay, what else is going on in the orchard?
Well,
figs are ripening up now.
Starting to ripen. Have you seen any ripe figs
nope.
here in the town?
No? Nope. The squirrels have tried to get some, but they drop them because they're not ripe.
Yeah.
Any ripe apples yet?
Yeah. A Lubst Queen, an interesting Russian variety that's white. It's white, a very white apple, white flesh, very almost white, pure white skin.
The one that I remember being early is Lodi. Not a great tasting apple, though. Pretty bland. How does...
Lubst Queen is not bland. It's very flavorful. You know, it's a bit on the tart side, but it's an excellent eating apple. And right after it will be Wainuchi early, which is usually ripe by now, but it's, again, because the season's a little bit late. But that's a red and green apple that's of excellent flavor. And both these apples are very easy to grow here. Wainuchi early is just scab-free. It's just easy to grow.
Yeah, and I've tasted that. That's a good one. I think you had some in last year. The Grabenstein are starting to ripen in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
There's a big tree.
Yeah. So,
but usually there are enough to make applesauce by now, and it's pretty iffy if you can find enough.
I'm just pleased that there's a good crop of these. Another interesting fruit that, of course, most people love are cherries, and we're kind of in the mid, tending toward the late season cherries now. But I went to the Dalles recently to get some grafting wood, and they had a rainstorm up there, which had caused some cherries to crack. So actually, there was quite a few cherries they didn't pick, which I then picked myself and was happy eating them.
Huh.
But the variety Lappens was real fun. It's a variety that we grow, and
it's a dark cherry.
Oh yeah, it's very dark and wonderful flavor, and very large. Quite spectacular fruit.
I had cherries on my Rainier after starting the Spanish bush method of pruning several years ago, and my modus operandi to stay ahead of the squirrels this year was to start harvesting them early.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just pick the ones that look like they're almost ripe, and then I would eat half a dozen a day, and then I'd eat some more the next day and just stay ahead of them. And they never did find them.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
but this is a small tree.
One of the things I've thought about with squirrels is putting sheet metal around the trunk so they can't climb up the trunk. Would that help you?
Well, they can leap 4 feet.
4 feet?
Well, I mean, horizontally they can do that. I have my raspberry row, and then 2 feet away from that is my pear trellis, and then encroaching into that area are some western red cedar limbs that are hanging down. They're just growing, and the squirrels can leap from the pear orchard, the pears to the cedars. But first of all, they have to leap from the berries to the pears, and then to the cedars. Well, I scared one, and it was very motivated, and it leaped over the pear tree. It just so they can. They're amazingly strong climbers and leapers. So if you could isolate it enough where they could have nothing to jump from, that would work.
That would be, I think it would be an interesting challenge. If I thankfully don't have a lot of squirrel problems, probably because of our dogs that
could be
keep them away. But if I had a small plot and I had a cherry tree and I had squirrel, I mean, I would like to try making an inverted cone.
The
sheet metal, so that even if they could think they could leap above the metal, it would be facing outward, and they'd be really challenged. You know?
Yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
So, any ripe pears yet?
No.
Any?
No, I shouldn't say that. There are some. There was a variety that we haven't grown yet, called it's an Italian variety. The first name of it's Precoce. Which precocious, I would think, is saying, you know, and it was a small pear, but quite good. And I think we may start growing it because it was already ripe. Yeah, ripened about 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
even
that,
after all
that would be mid-July-ish, to mid-July.
And speaking about early things, sort of going back for a moment to figs, we're planning a trip to Turkey and Italy next June. There's a mulberry conference in Turkey, and I've never been to Turkey, and we want to go there and then come back and check out the early, what they call the Breba crop of figs, both in Turkey and in Italy. and see what varieties might be out there that could work in our climate. Because the Braba crop, the one that ripens on the old wood, is really for figs the better one for us in general, because it's ripens in the summer, not in the fall.
I see.
So that'll be an exciting trip.
Okay. Well, it's time for the garden stumper. I don't have the garden stumper theme with us, but this is one that you'll just have to mull over until next month. I'll give you the answer then too. But
research will be done, I'm sure. I'm sure people will flock to the
library. This won't be too tough. But it has nothing to do with what we've talked about today. And that is, the Port of Portland is the nation's number one exporter of what? What crop? The Port of Portland is the nation's number one exporter of what crop? So we'll have that then.
Yes. A crop that's important for things you can make out of fruit.
Well, yeah. That's a good hint. And with that, we'll take our second musical break. I'm talking with Jim Gilbert. We'll be back with what's going on in the vegetable garden and summer pruning. Stay tuned. Back here talking with Jim Gilbert. That was Booker T and the MGs called Homegrown. That's nice. What we'll be talking about and next here. What's going on in the vegetable garden? You have a vegetable garden there out there a little bit?
Hardly this year. Anything. We've been so busy. It's crazy.
Yeah. You know? I've been kind of busy too, but can't neglect that. Yeah. I harvested the first green beans, first potatoes, first cucumbers for your first zucchini in the last week or so.
Great.
So it's nice to be able to go out there and have some options for our dinner. And broccoli's been doing that for months now. And the greens are going on there. We'll talk next about summer pruning. The idea of summer pruning is that the ideal time to do that is in mid-July through the end of August. And I'd like to point out, you can find this newsletter that comes from the Columbia County Extension Service, Chip Buble, out there in St. Helens. And I get this mailed to me, but you can get it online too. You can download it from there or view it on their website. There, it's called Country Living. But Chip's just got the, I think, some real user-friendly information in that. And Jim, when you're gone next month in September, I might see if Chip can join me to be my fill your chair there. Or try to fill your chair there in any way.
He'd be great, I'm sure.
Well, he's a very vegetable-oriented, or not oriented, but that seems to be what his... what he talks about mostly, but I'm sure he can talk fruit too. So, but I thought I'd just use this as a guideline here to say why we prune in the summer as opposed to winter. Just a couple of guidelines here. Generally, if your tree is the size that you want it to be, your fruit tree, then summer pruning is a good way to go. Because when you prune when it's winter or early spring, it tends to stimulate growth. When you prune in the summer, it has a kind of a, not kind of, it has, it tends to have a dwarfing effect. So if you're removing the leaves, there'll be less photosynthesis going on there. So it'll slow the carbohydrate storage there and will slow down the growth for the following spring and summer. Also, it tends to open up the middle, give it more sunlight to come through there, which can help produce better colored fruit as well as better sugar fruits, sweeter fruits. It's also better weather. When do you do your pruning out there? You've got hundreds, thousands of trees to... I mean, I don't know how many you'd have to actually produce. I mean, quite a few.
Yeah, and our pruning is done we get fruit, but that's not our primary goal. Most of our work is to produce more wood for budding and grafting. So we do it in December, January, February.
And then you save that wood.
Sometimes we just prune so that we'll have new wood the following during the summer that we can then cut.
Oh, because you do year. You do budding.
Budding is our primary
right, you don't
way of propagating
really,
fruit
right.
trees.
Uh huh. Yeah, that's maybe we should talk about budding workshop. I mean, budding maybe next year.
Yeah.
Because this is the time. Generally, August is the time to do budding.
Yes, this is the time.
Right. Well, back to the summer pruning. Another of my standards is that we're not going to be making structural cuts at this time. I'm not going to be taking off huge branches. In fact, my rule of thumb is nothing larger than what you can cut off with hand pruners. So, ostensibly, if you have stronger hands, you can cut off a bigger branch. But that just gives you an idea of what kind of cuts we're going to be making. One way to proceed is that you're just going to be cutting off the water sprouts or the water shoots or the suckers. Although suckers, the water sprouts and water shoots, we use those interchangeably. Suckers oftentimes come up from the roots. You're going to cut those off too. But
yes.
The one thing we do in the summer at the minimum is just cut off all of those. Well, maybe not all of them. If you have some very small ones that are coming out, maybe leave one or two of those in an area because that would tend to, well, we're going to talk a little bit about science here, that at the tips of most branches is a hormone that's produced called auxin, A-U-X-I-N, and it inhibits growth. It's just, it's the hormone. That's why we get this typical little Christmas tree-shaped trees. You know, why don't all the branches grow up as tall as that central leader? It's because of this auxin that's being produced that acts as a
growth suppressant.
Yes, that's the word that I'm looking for there. Acts as a governor. So there's another way to think of it there that just suppresses the growth there. And so if you cut off all of these branches that are producing some auxin, then it just kind of opens up the tree to say, okay, now there's, you know, it's a vacuum and everybody's going to try to grow the tallest.
It's a leaderless tree.
Very good. Literally and figuratively in that. And so if you leave one that's small, it's small for some reason, and you leave that one, then it will still produce some auxin to prevent more growth, more suckers or water shoots. So enough. That's it. Leave one or two of those. I try to do that in an area. I might say that. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason that that we do it during this time period is that, let's see here. I just read from what he says here. I should have had this. It should have been my reading glasses.
Want me to?
Right. Oh, here it is. Summer pruning is best done from about mid-July to the latter part of August. Pruning earlier than this may stimulate a whole bunch of sprouts that will have to be removed. Pruning later than August can reduce the dwarfing effect you are trying to achieve. So this is the time to do summer pruning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we do that to some degree, but mostly, like I said, we're doing our pruning in the winter. One of the concerns I have about summer pruning, and it's not something I know personally a lot about, but if you have to be a little careful, I know with some plants, about not taking off your fruiting wood for the following year.
Indeed. Mostly summer pruning is going to be taking off these shoots.
Yes.
The water shoots.
The water sprouts that come up along the branches, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And there is an extra problem here in that you have live fruit out there, big fruit, and I inevitably knock off some, or sometimes I prune off some.
Yeah,
I didn't know there was a fruit on that.
Yeah, in some cases that might, when you're doing this, I think it's always good to pay attention to your plants, being with them, being around them. I mean, sometimes I don't visit mine often enough. Uh-huh. They get a lot of fruit. For example, the fruit starts weighing down the branches. The branches start breaking sometimes.
Yeah.
By being out there doing a little summer pruning and just visiting your tree, saying hi to it, and then maybe you'll see that it's a little heavy and you have to take some fruit off so that it doesn't break.
And you might see evidence of coddling moth or the apple maggot.
Yeah. Or gophers or something you need to,
That's right. I heard it attributed to the English the first time that the best fertilizer is the owner's footprints.
That's great.
It has nothing to do with fertilizer. It just has everything to do with what you just mentioned, right. Being there and being observant and taking care of problems before they're huge.
We have a mother block, we call it, which is a fairly large collection of different plants. And I don't go to it often enough. So yesterday I was out looking for some wood, and I came across my beautiful Kankobai Japanese flowering plums. Which most people don't know too much about this plant, but it's a really interesting fruiting plant from Japan, probably other parts of Asia as well. Blooms in February. It's used to make umeboshi, pickled plum, which is used in Japanese cooking.
Oh.
The fruit is tart, but it looks just like an apricot. And it had already started to fall, and I was like, wow, that's interesting. I mean, because I hadn't been out there for a while, so that's another reason just to go visit your plants and see what's going on.
While I'm thinking of it, has there been any, what's been the latest on the spotted wing Drosophila fruit fly, this scourge that we're destined to have?
I hear reports about it, that it's in different fruits, that it's a pest that's bothering things, a significant
pest.
I've heard reports.
Uh-huh.
We haven't experienced it at our place yet.
Okay.
So, and I haven't seen it. I personally haven't been to an orchard or a berry patch where the spotted wing Drosophila is a problem. But I hear that there are places.
And we covered this last year. In fact, your daughter was doing some studies on trapping on this.
Trapping, yeah.
Uh-huh. And this fruit fly, unlike other fruit flies, will nest in ripe fruit. How's that different from the other typical fruit flies?
Well, typical fruit flies will infest fruit that's already overripe. Overripe fruit. And according to what we understand about this other one, this new one, is that it will get into fruit that's still on the plant, that is just ripe.
Soft skins fruit, so peaches, yeah. Blueberries, blackberries.
Yes, and we actually have traps at our nursery, and they have found some of these spotted-winged Drosophilas in their trap, but they haven't gotten into the fruit.
Okay,
they've spotted it in the fruit.
Right.
So I don't know. I know that we practice reasonably good sanitation. We try to get the fruit off the ground, so that there's no place for them to pupate and produce more. And it's just generally a good idea to do that.
Yeah, that would be for the typical fruit flies and other pests.
Yeah, all sorts of things. It's good to pick up that rotten fruit can get it off before it rots thoroughly.
Yeah, pick that stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, we're never able to do that. So, okay, so that's summer pruning. It's a nice time to do it. You don't have to do it all in one day. You've got a month and a half window to do that. I've started mine. I'm not finished, but I'm over half done. And I chip, shred the prunings, and it makes hot compost. And I like doing it in the summer.
Yeah.
It's much preferable than the winter.
I have a bumper sticker I haven't yet created, but an idea for one. So just to make winter work a little more fun, if you think about it, like I'd rather be pruning, where there's ones that say I'd rather be skiing.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's a little hard sometimes to look up into a tree when rain is pouring down on your face, to admit, but you can find times when it's not too bad.
Hopefully we're talking about home orchards that are smaller in scale and have one or six trees to deal with.
Right.
Won't have to do that. Okay, we'll take our last musical break and come back and talk about cover crops.
Good.
How's that? Stay tuned.
My true love has promised to come back to me. He promised to stay for a lifetime through and change my sad flowers to the red, white, and blue. He held me and kissed me, and he swore he'd be mine when he came back last trip. The deep, salty brine. It was on that sweet morning that I told him I care, and a bouquet of new hope he tied in my hair. My roses of summer, on my cheeks like a ring, buttercups and daisies. He thinks so shy, nobody can love you as dearly as I. My pinks and my kiss another was prettier than me.
Well, sorry about that beginning on that there. That's called My Flowers Grow Green. And an interesting album from Jonathan Brook, a 2008 release called The Works. And all of the lyrics were by, or lyrics, I guess, were by Woody Guthrie.
Nice.
That she put to music.
Wow,
there.
Great.
So that's good. Jonathan Brook, My Flowers Grow Green. We'll talk about cover crops next. This is Glenn Andreessen talking with Jim Gilbert, One Green World. Cover crops are a plant that you would typically plant when nothing else is going to be planted there, not a productive crop, so to speak, or an edible crop. And typically they don't produce food, but they have other benefits for the soil, mostly for the soil. But they also help with insects, attracting insects when they bloom, and keeping the microbial life alive in the soil and whatnot. And longtime listeners to the Dirtbag will know that I, for dealing with the cover crop in the spring, is I don't want to turn that under and create green manure. Oftentimes in the same breath, cover crops and green manure. The idea is we plant the cover crop in the fall. It germinates, grows a little bit, a couple inches maybe, or more. Stops growing during the cold season. And then in the spring, early spring, late winter, we'll put on a lot more growth. And before it starts to form seed pods, we want to remove the cover crop. Now, farmers typically will have big equipment that they can just plow under the cover crop, and then it will rot in the soil. And that's what we would call green manure. We're actually adding this organic matter into the soil. And it will, because it's smaller, will decompose pretty quickly. That's not the case with the typical home gardener, in that we may not even have a rototiller or anything to chop it up. And I don't recommend disturbing the soil if we don't need to. And in the case of cover crops, we don't need to. So that's in the spring. So right now is a good time to start thinking about what cover crops you will be planting when your garden beds, your vegetable garden beds, become vacant. You've harvested all your potatoes, for example. What are you going to do with that space? Well, plant a cover crop. That's the thing to do. During the summer, our choices are limited, and oftentimes what's recommended is buckwheat. It will flower in about 30 days, and it's a great bee plant. Actually makes pretty dark honey, mm-hmm. molasses dark.
Excellent honey.
But a good one, yeah. And there are others that you could plant in the summer, but buckwheat is a good one, just quick in and quick out. But these other ones that we'll talk about now will be growing all through the winter.
Before we leave the summer ones, I think it's good to mention one that we use, which is Sudan grass, or a hybrid of Sudan and sorghum, which what I look at both with buckwheat and with Sudan grass is they're both fast growing, and that's when you're trying to get ahead of the weeds. It's important to get something that's fast and will shade the weeds so that they don't get ahead of the cover, and there's weed seed in your soil.
Sure.
it's there.
And so, I'm sure you're out there using tractors and exposing those.
Right. We disk, and so that's it's on a larger scale. We're disking, I would use buckwheat. We do both buckwheat and Sudan grass.
How long does Sudan grass take to germinate, and how long do you let it grow?
It's fast, depending upon when we plant it. Of course, we're just planting it right now. We will let it grow until the end of September. Or last year, we actually just let it stay, and it just was killed by frost, which would be the same thing with buckwheat, and just let the ground go fallow during the winter with all the vegetative material on it.
On the top, protect it from the rains,
and
compacting
erosion.
Rains and
yes.
erosion. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But generally, what we'll do is we'll disc it in later in the fall, and then we'll plant a winter cover crop in that spot.
Do you recommend Sudan grass for home gardens because it's so fast? If you're starting a new area, you weren't ready to plant yet, do people sell it? I mean, do garden stores sell it?
I'm not sure. We buy it from a place in Salem called Bailey Seeds.
Yeah.
And they do sell small quantities. Sell it by the pound as well as by in the bag. And there's an interesting, we discovered recently that there's Sudan grass is used for feed and for green chop, as they call it, for cattle. But there's a hybrid. There's a hybrid of Sudan grass and sorghum. Sorghum is a coarser stemmed relative, and they've hybridized the two. From what I understand now, the hybrid is actually better for a cover crop for green manure. It makes more vegetative material than the straight Sudan grass does.
Okay.
And it works well for us, and I think it would be a fairly easy plant to also grow for a homeowner.
Well, I like that observation that it germinates faster than the weeds.
Yes.
And so it can crowd them out, and just they won't have nearly the stand or come up at all. So that's one thing to consider. If your garden beds are already established, they won't have nearly the seed bank. And if you're practicing no-till or no rototilling, then it's easier to stay ahead of the weeds. But if that's the case then, and you're going to have fallow beds, what do we put in them? Well, there's 4 or 5 main crops, cover crops that are available in garden stores. The two that I recommend are fava beans and crimson clover. Fava beans are my cover crop of choice, although they're not as winter hardy. They may be only hardy to 25 or 20 to 25, maybe not even that. And it depends what your microclimate is too. I lost virtually all of my fava beans on the front part of my house, the east side, probably because of those winds. And on the back side, I only lost half or something like that.
Interesting.
So, yeah. But fava beans would be planted generally in October. You might get by planting them mid-September to October. Excuse me. The problem is you just don't want them to get too big before they go into the cold period where frost or cold can wipe them out. If you are, let me start again here. The certain cover crops like the fava beans, the crimson clovers, the crimson clover, the Austrian field peas, and also the vetches, those are all legumes, meaning that they are able to, what we say, fix nitrogen on their roots. They take the nitrogen that's in the air, which is a lot of nitrogen in the air, about almost 80%.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. And with the help of certain bacteria, can convert that air, elemental air nitrogen, into nitrogen in a form that the subsequent plants can use. The current plant really doesn't benefit from it. When the plant dies, then that nitrogen becomes available to the next crop or to organisms that are in the soil. So those are all legumes here. So if you wanted to plant a legume, September through October is the ideal time for crimson clover and Austrian field peas. If you wanted just a standard cover crop that does not fix nitrogen but does add loads of organic matter, annual rye is the way to go. Jim, do you use annual rye at all out?
We do. And we actually have recently started using a mixture of annual rye and vetch and a couple of other things, field peas, that's sold, I think it's called Garden Way or something.
Yes.
And so that's really nice. It makes a really nice winter cover crop.
Some of those even have buckwheat in them. Some of these packages that you can buy in the garden stores. And I used to kind of think, well, that's just... that's not so good. But if you're planting it in September, then you could get your buckwheat, get a crop of buckwheat.
And get some growth on it.
The frost would, our average frost in the city is not until November. So you might even be able to, it might even be able to mature, and even set some seed. I just let some buckwheat come back up in the soil year after year because it seeds readily.
Yeah.
And I like it for the bees.
Yeah.
Do that too. Cool. So these mixtures may be okay, but realize if you do, a mixture is a good thing. But look for it, and if it has buckwheat, then no, you're paying for something that's not going to
last. Winter.
Right, yeah. Over winter, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the annual rye is a great cover crop. I mean, it's very it establishes very quickly. I've planted it as late as the end of October.
Yeah.
And still had a stand over winter, and then, boy, the next spring, once it warms up, it starts to grow. And usually we disc it sometime in late April, early May.
Do you ever mow it down, or you just disc it right in?
We usually just disc it in.
Yeah, you got those big, powerful.
That's right. Biodiesel-powered tractors. But you can also spade it in, too. It doesn't have
yeah,
to
but when when the stands are 2 to 3 feet long, that's what I'm saying. You know, that's a lot of spading to get it chopped up so it can be... So it can decompose compost in the soil. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're trying to plant through that stuff, and it just doesn't work out too well.
No.
So,
yeah.
Okay, Jim, thank you very much. We're at the end of our time. You'll be back in 2 months.
It looks like it. Yeah, I'll be back with all sorts of pawpaw stories.
Yes, and that will be the time of the pledge drive, I think, in October.
Awesome.
We'll have that, and so maybe we'll have some pawpaw plants for... Giveaways, we don't know.
We might be able to do something about that. Yeah, get the pawpaw interest all whipped up. Yeah.
So this program, along with most others that you hear on KBOO, will be available. Actually, I shouldn't say that. At least this program will be available on tape or online for listening. And I've been sent some statistics and... Jim, you know, people are listening and downloading some of these programs 2,000 to 3,000, 4,000 times online. So you can do that.
That's outstanding.
Indeed it is. I'll be back on September 14th. That's the next Dirtbag show. That's the live Dirtbag show. This one's on tape. Again, thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Glenn.
Have a good time in pawpaw land.
Okay.
This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for listening. Be well.